Boom, 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 and it was from 1919. Now, where did Jerome Kern get that for Old Man River 10 years later?
He did it in the American way. He stole it.
Must have been.
You're on the radio. Oops. Well, it could be you. You're on the radio. Yes? Hello?
Yes. Please pardon me. I'm calling from a basement, and I was outside. I had taken myself outside trying to reach you, and I got disconnected over 6 times by the telephone company. So I'm very afraid now that if I start walking out, I get disconnected.
Well, don't move and make your call brief. This is Newark, right?
Yes, it is.
Hi.
Yes. Okay. Beautiful, man. Always a great show, Bob. I'm calling regarding She and also the return of She. And then I think there was Montezuma's Daughter, all written by the same man. I think he was also made a knight because I remember him having Sir, you know, Sir Rider Haggard.
That's right.
Yes.
I thought you were talking about Montezuma's Revenge, which is a whole other story.
No, that's
people in
story.
Texas know about that.
Yes.
We're close to Mexico.
Montezuma's Daughter was a very great book, and we read it. I think I did it in high school, what we call in the British Commonwealth class 3, which might be maybe the 6th grade or something like that here. And it was a beautiful series. I think Sir Rider Haggard also wrote King Solomon's Mind.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Right. He wasn't Terry Southern. You ought to pick up this book. It's called Now Dig This.
Okay.
The Unspeakable Writings of Terry Southern.
Okay.
It's edited by Niall Southern and Josh Allen Friedman.
Okay.
That's me.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, Bob. I'm glad that I wasn't disconnected. And I really appreciated that lady's enjoyment of literature and the whole nuances of the She.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
How is your problem with your papers working out?
Everything is okay now, and I'm looking forward to returning to the world of work within a week.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
And then we will celebrate. I will come and pour libation and a toast for all of New York on here.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay.
This is a gentleman who lost his wallet with his green card in it. And he lost it during the week of November 11th, when anyone who didn't have papers was suspect, arrested, and...
That's why he's hiding in the basement.
Yeah, he went on the air here, and people said, people in the audience said, look, I work near immigration. I live near there. I'll be glad to walk you through the, you know, and help you to get your papers and explain to them. He said, well, I speak English, but sometimes they don't have patience to listen to me.
WBAI gets results.
Well, in that case, we certainly did. The listeners did. You're on the radio. You're on the radio.
Astros now.
You're on the radio.
Oh, that's me. Hold on.
Whoa.
Sorry about that.
Okay, all right.
Sound like an owl. Whoa. Don't try that out in the wilderness. There was something that you said, and I can't remember what I wanted to get to about, but I do. So let me get to another thing. You're not allowed to talk about certain people. Is that right?
I don't think it's right at this moment.
Yeah, no,
to talk talk about Osama bin Laden or any of the other destroyers or alleged destroyers.
I'm concerned because I don't know when this was instituted, but there's been some awful attacks by some of these people directly at Amy, and it ought to be go across the board. I can understand why none of this should happen.
Absolutely.
And
I heard some of them, and I thought that they were really pretty repulsive.
It's quite disgraceful. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're running scared or what's happening, but at a time when people should be opening up.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Reconciliation doesn't mean pull your head into your shell.
Sure.
Mm. If that's what is intended.
Mm.
Anyway, thank you.
Sure enough. Take care.
Bye. You're on the radio. Hello.
So what? I'm a witness to your referring to Amy Goodman as a white bitch, huh?
Oh. Hello? I didn't mean to cut that off. That sounded like the voice of... I stopped myself just in time. And he was playing a tape of one of the alleged incidents. I really, if he calls back, I will let that play. But it was cut. Really, it was an inadvertent cutoff. You got to believe me. You're on the radio. And you're on the radio.
Hello.
Yeah, I'll. Shabazz, your third call. Shabazz, you're out. You're on the radio. Hello. Yeah, hi.
Hi. Am I on the air?
Yeah.
This is Cloudy.
Second call. You're on the radio.
Roll on, John. Roll so slow.
That was the Dylan song I played earlier from John Cohen's new album.
Tell me, how can I roll?
This has got to be Jeff.
We don't fuck. Ask my girl. She married me. She said, oh, Jeffy, you never could be. What's up?
What's up, man?
Keep on.
Speak low when you speak low.
Blacks and Jews. Gosh, you too much, man.
Thank you, sir.
That song about 5 years ago, that was unbelievable. But just like what your mother said, you're going to get shot for writing something like that.
Ain't happened yet.
Because she got out of the New York metropolitan area. Anyway.
If it ain't happened in Texas, it ain't going to happen in New York.
That was a wild inspiration, you know, for a song, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Bob, and you guys talked about the Terry Southern thing. What was the other piece of literature that you were discussing last week about him? The worst.
Oh, that was two albums ago. I did a musical based on the life of Ed Wood Jr. before the movie. It came out a month before the movie, and I was greatly overshadowed with that. But it was called The Worst in honor of Ed Wood being the, quote, worst film director in history.
Do you have the Bela Lugosi song on here?
That's on The Worst. That's on The Worst.
You don't have a copy of that with you?
Not on me, no.
Oh, God, no. That's a great song.
Thank you.
About Bela Lugosi on morphine being resurrected to act in this film by the worst director in Hollywood, Ed Wood.
Yes, I did.
I think I was misunderstood. My question was, the writer, Terry Southern, who's new to me,
uh-huh.
Not about the worst, the Ed Wood thing, but about the a beatnik, the club scene that he wrote about, that you mentioned a few weeks back.
That Terry wrote about,
you said. Bob mentioned, yeah, that Terry
wrote mentioned about. That Terry wrote about the Bob club mentioned. Scene.
Bob, you don't remember that?
The club scene?
A bar scene.
Oh, he wrote in Candy, there's a scene about the San Remo.
That's it. That's what I'm talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
It's in Candy. Okay.
Right. A car crashes into the middle of the San Remo, which was a, quote-unquote, notorious gay bar on McDougal Street in the 60s. And Terry Southern wrote about that.
It's in Candy. Okay, I was trying to track
right.
that. I couldn't find it.
That isn't Candy, right?
I haven't read Candy in a while, and that particular scene doesn't jump into my mind. It's been years.
Oh,
Candy Christian.
Maybe it was the Magic Christian.
It sounds more like the Magic Christian.
You have to read
I don't remember all a car crash.
Southern.
I don't remember a car crash in the novel Candy. Magic Christian. You know, but
Josh.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
You know, I think it was
Sorry.
Yes.
The car crash scene doesn't... there was another book called Flash and Filigree, Terry Southern's first novel published in England. Maybe it's in that.
Josh, I have an excellent musical question for you.
Yes.
A quick question that also speaks to everybody. Right now, my capo is up. I'm tuned down 2.5 steps, so that's the side. But the capo is up high on the guitar. Could you explain to everybody why... And the E string is tuned down to a D. Why do we get that mournful? I got the drone D, low D, and the drone high D. But you know,
the question
Bob
is,
Dylan did all that. It's so mournful. I'm instantly transformed when doing that. I remember as a 17-year-old, I guess the two drone thing. First of all, right? That creates a mournful.
You're
sound.
Talking about drop D tuning.
No, just my first and my sixth string are down.
Yes, that's called drop D tuning.
Okay,
very common.
Right.
Yeah, Steve Stills played with that a lot.
And
McCartney did it a few times.
It creates that, I guess the drone is what, for our call.
Yeah, you have a lot of D notes in there, so
right,
it gets more of a drone.
The way our ears interpret that, the way we've been socialized, that, you know, speaking of, you know, connections worldwide, that brings up something that's cross-culturally, or that our culture interprets as mournful, soulful.
Well, then it would be even lower and more mournful in a lower tuning. You don't need a capo to do that.
Well, I was down 2.5 steps as it was.
You know, that drop D has nothing to do with the capo, really.
Right, no, the
but you got to be a mournful guy to make something sound more mournful. The guitar doesn't do it for you automatically.
Well, that's true.
It comes
too,
from
man.
Your from
that's,
your soul, from your spirit, and your voice to get to be mournful. There you go. Oh, that's so lonesome and mournful.
Oh.
See, it's because of you.
I hesitate to take you off the phone if you're that alone, but I'm going to...
I'm so entertained.
All right, guys.
Take care, Jeff.
Thank you.
You're on the radio. And it's you. You're on the air.
I want to say... that I'm running for president of the whole planet.
Don't get so close to the phone. We can't hear you. It's breaking up.
Yes. I want to say that in the future, I'm wondering about the United Nations.
No, it's breaking up.
What do you think?
It's breaking up. You got to get better technical.
You must be calling from Houston.
Yeah. Sorry. You're on the radio.
Cloudy's an asshole.
You're on the radio. And you're on the radio.
Okay, Bob, let's try again.
So far, so good.
Which, Doris, get the oats. Hold on, everybody. Get the machines. Play tape.
I was witness to your referring to Amy Goodman as a white bitch.
How did you
I think your denial is cowardly.
How did you make that tape, Robert?
Why do you assume I made it?
Well, who did make it? The engineer who was on duty at that time. Wait a minute.
You said... Why do you want to kiss that white bitch's ass?
That's not
That's
true.
What you said.
That isn't so.
Okay.
Play the tape for us.
You got to stand by that, Clayton?
Yes, I am. And I've heard the tape. I heard you talking to Dennis Bernstein. And nowhere on that tape is that statement made.
I want to kiss white ass. You can do it somewhere else besides the show. I guarantee you that.
Certainly sounds like there are people who have a lot of evidence of what we've been talking about here. You're on the radio.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello,
hello.
Oh, hello? Hi, are you there?
So far.
Okay, I remember.
Maybe not next week, but I'm here now.
No, you'll be there.
Always so sure.
Knock on knock. I remembered what it was I wanted to...
this is your second call, but you're getting a special dispensation because of memory loss.
Okay, great. You're doing all right. You had mentioned Jerome Kern and the source of the showboat tune, Old Man River.
Yes, I did.
There was a special on TV a few years ago, which may rerun. And who was his partner in that play, in that musical?
Jerome Kern, and who was I don't know, and I didn't say that as to list that as a fact that Jerome Kern would have ripped off.
No, no, well, let me tell you.
It was just an observation, a musical observation.
Well, it's more than
I wouldn't testify that Jerome Kern may have come up with that melody on his own, but I did hear something that long predated Showboat that had that melody.
More than likely, because, and it kind of rang a bell, because in that it showed him and his partner going through the South because they didn't feel that white Jewish New York boys should just sit down and try to do this without showing respect to the get to know the areas that they're going to be taking from. And they did go around to churches and community groups, and they're listening to individuals, and they did take down a lot of music.
Yeah, that must have happened. I wonder whether Rodgers and Hammerstein ever went to Oklahoma. You know, they probably didn't.
No.
You know, that was just their vision. But you don't have to go somewhere to absorb the cultural, the music or this. You can, you know, there are novelists who've written books about countries they've never even been to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can't really qualify it that way. So I didn't mean to suggest that. I guess I did suggest that Jerome Kern took off the melody from some unknown group. It's very possible. But
you know, the philosopher Nietzsche never went more than, I think, 60 miles away from his home base. So came up with a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's all, you know, inner space in the mind is endless. You don't have to necessarily go. It does help to go absorb a culture if you're going to be a songwriter and you want to write New Orleans music.
Somebody came up with the theory of simultaneity.
Yeah.
Synchronicity?
Yeah, synchronicity. Things happen all over. It's like, I guess it's equivalent to the 100th monkey.
Yeah, it was some
psychiatrist
boy named Jung, who came up with that synchronicity.
Is a young fellow in the background who's trying to say something there?
I don't know. Is that woman from the Bronx still on the phone?
No, that was me. I was trying to say that when DNA was discovered, someone independently discovered it on the other side of the world.
Oh, isn't that something?
Yes.
Yeah, and that, you know, the idea is that once a molecule has been created in one laboratory, for some reason it's easier to create it in another laboratory, even if there's no connection with the...
That is beautiful.
It is amazing.
In other words, minds might be connected by radio waves we don't even know about yet.
There may be something to have to do with magnetic fields, too. I understand that there's very strong magnetic fields in Tibet, which might account for some of the high you know, spirit that they've reached. And then directly through the planet, it reaches the four corners of the Navajo Hopi.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's why there's a connection with, getting back to Bob Dylan and being connected from Minnesota to folk music or English groups being connected to the Black South and relating to it so much. You know, I'm a picker in Texas, and I grew up in New York. Nobody taught me how to play slide guitar or do finger picking, but I feel such a strong connection to Doc Watson and his playing.
The magic electric phonograph that brought you and Doc Watson together for the first time, right?
Yes. Well, I saw him in Texas when I moved there, and the connection was fantastic.
But, I mean, suppose you had a cousin or an uncle who played blues guitar, and, you know, every couple of years there'd be a big party where he would play the blues guitar, right? And so it's your instrument, right? You can play the blues guitar just like, you know, your cousin or your uncle, and no one would object if you played the blues guitar. But when you listen to, you know, like a rich record library full of blues guitar, it's almost...
like having an uncle playing.
It's almost like having an uncle who plays the blues guitar.
Yeah, I still find it's still quite remarkable, the idea that sound could be captured on something, on tape or on CD.
Yeah.
Did you know it's an amazing thing, which I'm listening to you with great satisfaction and humility, actually, but I really think that the way you're talking is the way kids should be taught.
Me or Bob? Both of us.
Both. It's a kind of...
Well, we speak in pure Ebonics. And I agree, Ebonics, it needs to be integrated into the Queen's English officially. Ebonics is the Queen's English. So,
would you clarify Ebonics?
That was the term they came up with a few years ago for black English.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds better than Blinglish.
Is that English from Brooklyn?
No.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes, exactly. Ebonics is it's like a technical word for black English that was just came up a few years ago when there was the controversy over whether that should be taught accepted in official school American schools as a way to speak.
I hear course, us fading over.
I think there's some music coming out there.
This is some music. This is music from one of those high places where they have a lot of mineral deposits. That doesn't sound like someone from the mountains of Tennessee singing about their heart, you know, I'm wrong. But that's from music from Peru.
It must be on the same altitude as the Smoky Mountains or something.
Could be.
So that those invisible synchronicity radio waves go from soul to soul.
As my friends in USCO used to say, we are all one.
She was singing the Lima, Peru version of Coal Miner's Daughter.
That's right. You're on the radio. Oh. Could be you. Hello? Hello, you're on the radio. Strange. And you're on the radio. Is it you?
Yes, hello. Hi, Bob. How are you? It's Eric.
Eric Levine. Hi.
Yeah. Josh, did you grow up on LaSalle Street?
No, where is LaSalle Street?
All right, then. It's not the same Josh. I knew a Josh Friedman who played the guitar when I was a kid.
Good Lord, that's why I have Alan in the middle of that.
Well, I
my
think
middle
his name.
Name
was Alan, too. That's why I was sound. I mean, I think so. So
well,
I trust.
Well, Eric, you said before something about Pete Seeger. Eric has played with Pete Seeger. And Eric Levine is part of a group called Disabled in Action Singers.
Wow.
And you're involved with publication of folk music, aren't you?
Well, sometimes, yeah. Uh-huh.
We had mentioned an hour ago, Bob and I were talking about the verse in Woody Guthrie's song, This Land of
Yes,
Ruin
I
and
know
My
what
Land.
That is.
What was the verse that
the
was
verse
taken
was,
out
there was
from
a
old
great
schools?
Big wall there that tried to stop me. There was a sign there that said, no trespassing. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me.
Well, Latch sings that. Latch sang that last night.
Yeah, well, now it's, you know, now everybody knows that there was a couple more he wrote.
There were even more verses that were taken.
Yeah, there was about...
Do you remember those?
Yeah, by the church, something in the city, by the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. As they stood there stumbling, I stood there mumbling. This land was made for you and me. And the last one was, nobody living can ever stop me as I go walking on freedom's highway. Nobody anywhere can make me turn back. This land is made for you and me. Yeah. And, you know, those were not in the songbooks when we were kids.
No,
you know.
No, those were taken out.
I think in 68, Pete Seeger just said, well, now I'm going to sing you some verses that Woody wrote that you've never heard before. And that's, you know, now a lot of people sing them now, yeah.
We had no idea what that song meant when we were in grade school in the 60s. I happen to be 45 years old, but that was a standard song in any elementary school in your music class.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same.
Without any of us ever being taught what it meant or what it was supposed to be about.
Well, it did have a different feeling than God Bless America, right?
Here it comes.
Dug away, Eric. No, don't drink water.
That we have to get it back from Bush and all those fascists, you know.
John Ashcroft does not want those verses put back in.
No.
To the song.
And,
there was a meeting on Varick Street about people who were concerned about the infringements on civil rights in the last couple of weeks since the so-called Patriot Bill was passed. I wonder if there was anyone who was there who can give us a little report on what took place. Maybe call 209-2900 and talk about that a bit.
Latch played with us last night at Village Underground.
Yeah, that's right.
He opened the show.
You're going to play again in New York, aren't you? Or in the
yeah,
area?
We're playing. The Josh Allen Blues Band from Texas is playing in Brooklyn tomorrow night.
Oh, right. Where?
At the Three Jolly Pigeons.
Where is that?
It's actually it's 68th and 3rd in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. We're on at 10 o'clock. My boys from Texas are still in New York City for one more night. It's a wonderful Irish bar in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, Three Jolly Pigeons.
You know the exact coordinates?
68th Street and 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn is where it is, which is the Bay Ridge area, I believe. I played there once before a few years ago. A delightful little place, working class bar, dance place with real Brooklyn girls come in there with lots of lipstick and makeup that, you know, they look like they're from Brooklyn. I like that. And we're going to just
My mother was a Brooklyn girl.
Mine was too.
Just watch what you say about Brooklyn girls.
Mine was too. She's from Brooklyn too. So we returned to Brooklyn, my first return to Brooklyn in many years.
What's going on with you, Eric?
Well, I'm still involved with the same things I am, but I'm worried. I mean, I'm trying to look to where I can hook up to work with people about this whole thing that's happening with our civil liberties and everything. I mean, one of the things that I notice is that is that, you know, well, it's just very hard. I mean, a lot of people have been so emotionally involved that they I guess they don't see that that they're going to, they don't see what's happening. A lot of people, they don't care, right, left, whatever. I mean, it, some people see it and some people don't. I guess it's...
Isn't there a state of emergency right now that perhaps, and we'll never know this, maybe some other events were prevented, we'll never know this, by civil liberties being violated in the last few months? A thousand people were arrested. What if one of those people would have brought down another plane or something?
Look,
Even though 900 may be there on kind of looser charges, what if it prevented?
That's a kind of a logic which people are using, but I think it's going to be a very, I don't think that logic is going to pay off in the end. I mean, I think, well,
we'll never know. We will never know what was prevented.
You know, it depends. Not what's prevented, but what's getting started. I mean,
would you want to be in charge right now and make the decision on civil liberties one way or the other?
I think if I was in charge, I'd get to see the files. If I was in charge, a lot of things would happen that are not happening now. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't some nuts.
But what if, hypothetically, there was another tragedy committed, another atrocity on a grand scale because three or four guys didn't get... You know, they had their papers together, and what if something else had happened, some other horrible act?
Well, what if those people were not, what if those people were citizens already, or were not Islamic-looking?
That's terrible. It's terrible.
What if they were something else?
It's a terrible what if.
Why?
You know, a lot of people are unfortunately losing right now because they didn't, because they're not citizens, and I'm sure innocent people are being rounded up. What if in World War II in the Japanese internment camps, what if somebody who was interned was someone who was a spy? What if one in a thousand Japanese was a spy?
Do you
and
think that
would
justifies,
have turned the
does that justify taking innocent people,
I don't know,
good Americans, and putting them in internment camps? I don't think so.
It's a terrible thing, but yet, who knows? Who knows?
Well, no, but not who knows. I mean, this is not...
What you're talking about is something called profiling.
Yes.
And I had the very unusual experience of not being profiled tonight. I was going down Broadway, very slow pace, and, you know, there was this big Department of Sanitation truck in front of me that was spraying water down the street, and all of the cars were forced to follow behind it. It's like they've been doing wash-ups of the streets that have been carrying the debris and the body parts from the Trade Center ruins to the landfill in Staten Island. And so they wash the streets in case some terrible bit of something or other, should contaminate someone's shoes or something. And don't think that I wasn't sick for a couple of days after coming down to the station and walking through some of the water that was running down the streets then when they were washing them down. So they probably should be doing it. But there were, you know, it also caused a bottleneck in the traffic on Broadway that was surrounded by a group of cops. And I saw this this cop looking at me, and he looked past me, and he motioned somebody else to pull over to have their car searched. And I thought, hey, for the first time since 1950, I'm not the profile that they're looking for. You know, it's very strange, but in a certain way, you know, I was glad it wasn't me. But I don't think it's right that it's somebody else just on the basis of the fact that they look, I don't know, like you do. I mean, somebody wearing...
That's my bass player you point to,
Robbie. Yeah, yeah.
He's innocent.
Hey.
Hey, listen, you
where
know,
were you on 9/11?
He was in Dallas. I was with him. We had a gig.
Oh, yeah?
He didn't do nothing.
Were you at the airport?
No, he was playing. He wasn't even at the airport.
So you won't talk, huh?
I was at home.
Oh.
I can't wait till somebody uses the word anti-Semitism for this because, you know, Arabs are Semites, and I mean, I'd like,
right.
You know, I'd really like to see B'nai B'rith sue.
There are at least 40 Israeli citizens who have been detained.
Yes, yes. Isn't that interesting? Because they...
In the same way.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a completely new profiling thing that's happening, but it's just as ugly as anything else. I mean, you know, especially if you have friends who it happens to, you know, then it's not...
Even worse if it happens to you yourself.
Yep.
Then it's first person.
Then it's first.
It's not removed anymore.
Yeah.
But surely there are some people who fit the profile who are also... were trained in Al-Qaeda. There's got to be some of those, too, that they've captured. As a matter of fact, there are.
Well, you know what?
There's two sides to it. It's a very, very tricky... I'm glad I'm not in charge. I'm sure Bob Fass is glad not to be in charge of the whole...
Well, you know, if I were in charge,
yeah,
I would point out that Al-Qaeda was trained by the CIA.
Yes.
And that the United States gave... millions of dollars last year to the Taliban.
Listen, if I was in charge, something would be shaking about the West Bank. And
just a minute. How do you spell shake?
Oh my God! I said
watch
the wrong
that.
Word.
Watch that. Well, you're the guy who started the movement for Jews. To give up their right of return to a Palestinian.
Yes, and I'm still...
I thought that was pretty hip.
I think... Well, I think I'm still trying to do it. I mean, and it will happen, and I will let you know. I mean, it's going to happen because I think it's very important that people make some kind of gesture at this point. It's got to happen soon, really, because things are getting so awful over there. I don't know if you've heard... yeah, you've been hearing the news and
nothing happened since we've been on the air in the past few hours.
No. But it's just the whole idea of what's happening with Sharon and his aggressive moves. I don't know if you and me disagree about that too, Josh. But what do you know?
My only feeling is I'm glad I'm not in charge of any of that because there's nobody who knows exactly what to do. They think
but
nobody could be have the ultimate answer as to what to do.
Not that they do, Josh, but would you do what Ariel Sharon did in terms of cutting off communication with Arafat, bombing his headquarters?
If you were under have you ever been in the army or you're not a Vietnam vet?
No, I'm not.
If you've ever been under fire, I'll bet you would revise your opinion. Your views greatly if you were in the line of attack or your family or relatives, it would change your life probably. And to think of what people live under, the kind of state of siege people in Israel live under.
But they're not all going, not everyone in Israel agrees with what Ariel Sharon is doing.
I mean, there's probably 150 different opinions in Israel. Everybody's got a... you know, what is the ultimate answer? There is not one.
There's a parliamentary system so that somebody...
Well,
but one guy has got to
be in
charge. One guy's got to be in charge, and if you'd been through, I guess, what Ariel Sharon was through as a general, all the decades of war that he'd been through, you'd have to have a very learned and... You would have a whole different view of it than being here in America, where we're relatively safe, or at least used
well,
to be.
I just want to return to the opening moments of the program. If you heard, this is WBAI in New York City. I want to return to the opening moments where we had someone who was a part of a theater group, the David and Goliath theater group, that was composed of Jews and Palestinians who were uniting to say the state... is Federate. To smash the state.
Bob, does everyone know who that was? Who the two actors were? Or is that are their identities masked?
Right. He said his name was what?
The two actors who opened your show at midnight. tonight? Are they publicly known, well, which actors those were?
Well, one of them was Sidney Smith.
Okay, they're not known. I was going
He's
to
known.
Comment on some of the wonderful theatrics that were going on here a few hours ago. Straight out of the living theater.
But, well, look, you know,
hey, what do I know? I'm just a blues guitarist.
Yeah,
I'm not,
I know.
Here I am
I know
trying
what you
to,
think,
you know, I would not dare to venture what somebody should do in
well,
Israel.
Well, I mean, you're
it would
saying
be
things.
None of my, I would be way out of line to even say, almost, you know, what they should do at this moment. They're under siege.
Yeah, they're under siege, but this is nothing very new. I mean, somebody needs to do something non-military to heal the rift. That's the problem.
I think
it's
somebody did.
An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth until everyone's going to be eyeless and toothless.
So you think that they should just pull back the military altogether, sit back and just say, let's be friends?
I think they have to, well, the hardest part is I think they have to get the settlers out of the West.
You know, there's
back.
A story, there's
they
an
really
old story,
do.
Bob would know this, about an old Jewish person being mugged in Miami, and they caught the mugger, and the lady said, let him go, he's a poor man, let him go. She didn't press charges, and a week later she came out, and it happened again. And she said, let him go.
Same guy, right?
Different. She got mugged twice or something.
You
and
knew
third,
I was a snake.
The third time, you know, anyway, I'm saying the story wrong. But everybody started screaming, mugger again, mugger again. Eventually, if you've been mugged so many times, you're not going to let the guy go. You're going to revise your opinion on that. And like I say, I'm not qualified to venture on what somebody what should be done in Israel, and unless you've been in the war and on the front line.
You know, Eric, I don't know what it would be like you took the drive from the Bronx to Woodstock.
Right.
Right. And there were snipers along the way.
Yeah.
You know, shooting at cars. I
oh,
know
no.
That
I mean,
would make it very difficult to be.
I don't deny it. I mean, I think it's
ghastly.
Very hard.
It's
I think
ghastly.
It's very hard.
But you got to remember who's giving them all these guns.
That's the whole point. Where the money is coming from us,
right.
The U.S.
The,
and we have, you know.
The guns in the hands of Hamas.
Yes.
Came from the United States.
And the training for Osama bin Laden came from the United States. And, you know, I think if anyone has to do something, it's us, U.S., you know.
We are.
Well, no, not that. Not that. What we have to do is we have to get our boat, our whole thing together here and stop sending guns and training everyone in the world and
the cat's out of the bag. The guns are already there. There's no pulling back now. The guns will never be collected or stopped.
There are
already 900 million guns out there.
There's always pulling back.
There's always
a way to pull back.
Yeah.
There's always a way to say, hey, too much blood.
Hey, look what happened. I mean, I hate to use it as an example, but even with the Camp David agreement, did you believe that Egypt and Israel would then all of a sudden get along and not fight? I mean, that happened.
It was like a miracle.
Well, I mean, it was...
So it can happen again.
Common sense.
Yes, but you see, there were people who said, wait a minute, where are we going to sell these guns?
That's right. Oh, well, there's another place. They went to another place. But, you know, I can't solve everything, but I'll tell you something.
Come on, solve everything.
If we don't...
Give it a shot.
It's the time now. This is... I mean, things are happening so fast and furiously with Ashcroft and all his homeland.
Yep. Oops. I think he was knocked off. Sorry, Eric.
Eric, you there?
Hi.
He made his point very well, though, Eric did.
Yes, he did, and I did not... Every button on the telephone is mislabeled right now. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi. I was calling because when you remarked that the mountain music from Peru sounded like the mountain music from here...
From the Bronx.
Well, it doesn't sound exactly like it, but it has some very similar tones, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've heard some from other parts of the world, too. One day they were playing some from the mountains of South Africa. And,
I guess mountain music is mountain music, wherever it is. There's
yeah, there was some from Asia.
Familiar
at some
strain.
Point.
Familiar
and
to
so
people.
You really hit on, I think you really hit on something there. In fact, I wish somebody would do a collection of it.
Mountain music from around
mountain
the world.
Music.
Mountain music from around the world, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that's all.
All right. Are you a musician?
No. I like to sing and dance, but
I don't need the competition. Thank you.
Like to listen. How's that?
That's wonderful.
That's a great art. And in very short supply.
You should need a license almost to listen to music. Uh-huh. They don't make them though.
No, I take license.
That's better.
Take license. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye.
And you're on the air. Last chance.
Bob, you got me here. I'm still on. Do you want me to leave?
Good. No, I don't. Actually, I don't.
Uh-huh.
You're not. You.
That must be Eric, right?
You went into the hold column.
Oh, okay.
So stay there. I'm going to put some other people on with you. That's
okay.
All right? All right. And you're on the air. Hello? Hello. What is that?
There's no place like Democracy Now. There's no place like Wake Up Call. No place like
that sounds like Carrie McDonough. Is that Carrie McDonough?
There's no place like Radio Free Ad. There's no place like David Rothenberg. There's no place like Health Watch. There's no place like Earth Watch. And most of all, there's no place like the old WBAI.
You're on the air. Hello? Hello? Oh. You're on the air.
I see the phone with 50 lights going off, and yet
you're on the air.
Yeah, you know, and people who justify the racial profiling of people who are of color or Middle Eastern descent really get my blood going.
Oh,
and people who justify the incarceration of the Japanese during the Second World War only because they happen to be Japanese really get my blood going. I mean, the thing is,
what type of blood do you have?
First of all, I'm Jewish, number one. And number two, I'm a human being. Number three, I'm a political activist of a long time. And number four, the people of the Middle East are not the enemy. Not at all. None of them are. You know, this racial profiling has been going on in the United States for a long, long time. Originally, it was used against people who were black, and it gave the police the justification to stop them, search them, throw up against the wall, arrest them.
So what else is new?
They were drug dealers.
Well, what else is new? Everybody knows that.
Yeah, so the people in the Middle Eastern descent shouldn't be in prison, and they shouldn't be harassed. They shouldn't be beaten up by right-wing fascist goon squads. They should be allowed to live their lives. Only because of what happened on 9/11.
Would you detain a card carrying Al Qaeda member by chance if it was?
I'd probably take him in, give him a place to crash in my squad. Yeah, straight.
Josh, I don't want to ask you what would happen or what has happened when you, for one reason or another, was subject to some kind of racial profiling, but don't we believe
it's terrible?
It's better to have a guilty person go free than to have an innocent person locked up.
That was wasn't that Plato, his original Greek, the Greek.
Yeah, what happened to
the
him?
The Greeks came up with that. I think better to have the guilty go free than the innocent be imprisoned. Again, if you're under fire, that rule can be changed very
quickly. See, I'm kind of worried if you keep saying
the state,
you're not under fire, maybe because somebody has been detained.
Been living in Atlanta for thousands of years, man, and I know the Jews have been there sharing it also. But damn it, you know, the Jews have picked the Israelis are now using Nazi propaganda, having been victims of the Holocaust. you know, and heaven forbid that should ever happen again to our people. Now they turn around, use Nazi propaganda like ethnic cleansing, get rid of the Palestinians.
Well, they're not getting rid of the Palestinians.
Well, that's what they're trying to do.
They're
kill them in mosques.
Actually, they're not getting rid of the Palestinians.
Well, I think it's sort of like are really pushing them out and starving them and keep. I mean, you know, and I think they're killing them. So yes, in a way, they are. I mean, there's no other way to really put it. I mean, they have got an oppressed group there, which is as oppressed as any oppressed group has ever been, as under fire and as, you know, constantly being harangued as any oppressed group has ever been. And they've got their troops in something which is really not even their territory. They have their troops someplace where they don't belong. So to keep, you know, I mean, someday, even as Jews, we have to look at that and say, hey, you know, this is just plain wrong. I mean, this is just what had happened to all kinds of, you know, to Jews before, and this is what had happened to other people, and this is an occupation, and then, like, let's not lie about it. Let's not, you know.
Let's call things by their right name. Yeah. You know, and because...
What if, I'm just curious, what if, where do you live?
I live in the Lower East Side, in a squat.
What if a group of American Indians came up to you and said they decided that, and they had proof that their ancestors had lived on your block 300 years ago, 400 years ago in the Lower East Side, and this was a sacred Indian burial ground, and damn it, they want that tenement that you're living in. They
well,
want
we
the
might,
block
we
back.
Might,
it was their
might,
land
we
first.
Might sit
and
down
was,
with them, pass the pipe, put a little Mother Earth, get a pipe and put a little Mother Earth into it and pass it around and come to it.
They don't want your pipe, they want your land.
Josh,
would you do?
This is a ridiculous hypothetical situation.
It's not so hypothetical.
Actually, it did happen. There was a town where there were Native Americans who sued to get it.
I'm making an analogy to Israel. Yeah. Whose land is it?
More to the point, Jews and Palestinians lived in the land of Israel, what's now the land of Israel, for thousands of years quite peacefully.
Yes.
And they got along together. But when the major powers of the world came in and made a country, some of the settlers and some of the people who were on the outside from the United Nations said that that neighborhood has got to be emptied, and said this just like when the Greeks who lived in Asia Minor were exchanged for the Turks who lived in Cyprus. Thousands of people were uprooted and shipped from, like, driven across overland, you know, with guns and clubs and whips. And it's time, you know, to say, hey, wait a minute, let's find some other way of dealing with the fact that we're not all from the same neighborhood to begin with. Now, in New York City, the thing I said earlier was we work it out.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, in Texas is a place, when I was in Houston, they were proud of the fact that 5,000 people moved to Houston from other parts of the country and the world every week. They said they come here because there's work here, because they want to work, because they want to be, and they wanted to be cowboys. And, you know, they would go to some bar where they could ride a bull. They would buy themselves a set of chaps, go to, what's the name of that guy's store who would outfit you with a hat and boots?
I've seen Chinese waiters with cowboy hats in Houston.
Well, all right. Well, all right, you know, we are all, you know, in a costume party.
Yeah.
The whole world is becoming a costume party.
In the 19th century, before, you know, it used to be the Irish that weren't, there used to be signs that said no Irish and dogs allowed. And
yep.
Listen,
there are still signs that say no dogs allowed.
What?
That's right.
There are still signs that say no dogs allowed.
Well, there used to be signs that said no Irish and no dogs allowed. used
yes,
to have...
Yes, those went out with colored water fountains.
Yeah, when they used to, and then they used to have pogroms. They used to have... And in the United States, they used to profile Jews, too. Us.
Are you, still, are you still angry about that? How old are you?
Well,
hey, I'm 50.
In 1950, 3 months ago. Hey, I've spoken to people whose phones were tapped in 1917. That's right. That's right.
How did they tap a phone in 1917?
You want to know? In the Custom House, you can read about this in Theodore White. In the Custom House, they had a telephone switchboard that went to every home in the New York area. And there were little tags attached to the phones of people who were suspected of being foreigners.
Who were suspected of
being foreigners? Yes, there were little... string tags attached so that someone could go up and could listen in on the phone of anyone that they wanted to. And
who were they searching for in 1917? I was kidding. They weren't looking for communists yet. Well, were they looking for Bolsheviks?
No, they were looking for Bolsheviks. They were looking for anarchists. They were looking for Germans soon after that.
It was a golden age of anarchy.
It was a golden age of phone tappery.
And then you ever hear of the Palmer Raids, 1919, 1920? Well, that's how they got stuck on Vanzetti. The cops all over the country busted into radical offices and arrested everybody. And then only because of a bank robbery or a murder in Braintree, Massachusetts. And so also because of the Russian Revolution. A. Mitchell Palmer was the attorney general. I forget who was the president back then. I think McKinley or Taft.
No, it was Wilson probably
Wilson?
At that moment,
okay.
I think.
And that's how they arrested Sacco and Vanzetti, and they framed him on this murder robbery charge, and they wound up being executed.
You know, it's almost 3 o'clock in the morning. And
you know where your children are.
And this is WBAI in New York City.
I've
made more station breaks tonight in one evening than I have in any 3.5-hour program since I've been on the station.
Bob, you don't do as many as R. Paul Martin, so come on. You listen to R. Paul Martin. Sorry, R. Paul, if you're listening.
I don't think you should criticize R. Paul Martin.
I like
doing
R. Paul Martin.
Station. There are lots of reasons to criticize everybody, but that's not a valid reason for criticizing R. Paul.
I like R. Paul Martin.
I can think of a few.
He's funny.
But
I like him, and I agree with a lot of what he says, too.
Well, I agree with a lot of what you say, too.
But I
criticize you sometimes.
Yeah, sure you do.
That's right. But someday I'm going to make an actor of you.
Huh?
Someday I'll make an actor of you.
Oh, that I would like. That I would appreciate. Yes, yes, yes. Well, whenever you get a play to do.
All right.
Can I suggest something? You know, I've never read it.
What's that?
Murder in the Cathedral.
Well, read it. Why don't you read it?
Just
I think this gentleman wants to work in Yiddish theater. He'd like to. He'd like to come back to Second Avenue and. Join a Yiddish, a nice Yiddish play.
So anyway, to wrap this up, the United States is arming the Israelis, like Eric Levine said. It's sending him guns, it's sending him tanks, it's sending him planes. What more do you need? The Palestinians don't have that many armaments. They got rocks. Rocks going against tanks and machine guns. Give me a break.
Take care.
Later.
And you're on the radio. Eric, you still there?
Yeah.
And hi, you're on the radio with Eric and all of the rest of us.
No, sure. They're not on the radio.
You?
Yes, good morning, everyone.
It's Monroe.
All right, Bob.
Master of the prolix.
Can I have my freedom of speech?
Well,
okay, come on, Bob, please.
I
want to talk about Stardust by Hoagie Carmichael.
I don't know whether I can permit that.
Well, I want to talk about
in light of the current situation,
too, but I want to edge up on them.
Well, talk about Stardust.
All right, well, Hoagie Carmichael, you were talking about music and attribution and, you know, things like that. Now, Hoagie Carmichael did a lot of good work, and one of the things was Stardust.
Bum, 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 bum.
Very good, Bob.
Bum, 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 bum.
Well, he wrote a piece that was very fast, a jump jive, Lindy Hop kind of tune. And he was very surprised that it didn't catch on and become famous, you know. It sort of was played and forgotten. It was on a record. And I heard the record played by, maybe it was Danny Stiles or Joe Franklin or Bill Farrar on Jazz Sampler or Dave Kenny on Everything Old Is New Again.